welcome to the Behind the Bra podcast brought to you by Barbells for Boobs, where we want to redefine the standard of breast healthcare and improve the quality of life post-diagnosis of breast cancer. I'm your host, Zayana Hansen. I'm the founder of this great organization. Thank you for joining us. Today, we get to sit with the inspiration of Barbells for Boobs. So my BFF, I'm not sure I'm hers, but we'll talk about that today.
You'd be calling people back.
Ceci Morales. She is a CrossFitter. She told me not to say that. She's a CrossFitter. She's my best friend, a breast cancer survivor, and a mom-to-be. So if you hear any burping, farting, or if there's restroom breaks, that is the reason why. Welcome, Ceci.
Thank you for that very nice introduction.
You're welcome. How are you?
Doing great.
How many weeks are you now?
I'll be 20 tomorrow.
Oh, man.
So almost 5 months.
Do you finally feel pregnant?
Only when I look in the mirror. So that's a good sign because I'm being treated really nice by this miracle inside of me.
Has it moved yet?
I feel the little bubbles or little...
Flutters,
whatever.
So cute.
Yes, it's really nice feeling. But that's what's scary because then you want to continue to feel that, right? You want to make sure everything's going good in there.
So. Yes. And when you don't, it's scary.
Yeah, so. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, welcome. I think that we're going to probably talk about some pregnancy stuff post-diagnosis. Ceci shared some really funny things with us today, which we'll talk about today. So where shall we begin? Let's begin.
10 years ago?
Let's start there. Like, yeah. When did we become friends?
Oh, no, that was more
than
10 years ago.
That was so long ago.
That was our Long Beach days in...
Our hood rat days.
In the 90s.
Way back when.
Hey, speak for yourself. I was wearing Doc Martens. Hey, hood rats didn't wear Doc Martens.
He was just a poser. It's all good. I couldn't afford Doc Martens, so I didn't wear them.
Back in the days when we were taking in people that you knew and found off
the street,
trying to help the world just like you're doing today, continuing to do so.
Yep. Just not bringing them to our couch anymore.
Well, no, that was just you sleeping on our couch.
All right. So in all seriousness, we'll talk about Ceci was a... I'm going to start here because I think that this is a really important conversation to have for any co-survivors out there or anybody that gets an email from their best friend about a cancer diagnosis, because this is the way that I received Ceci's news. And it wasn't even just email to myself, like a solo email to my friend Z. It was like me plus nine.
Nine really close friends that I just needed to tell. Dang. It's my way of communicating, people.
No.
Sometimes you can't talk about certain things.
So the first sentence was 10 days prior. So she knew for 10 days that she had breast cancer. And if I go back, I want to kind of go back to the 10 days prior. And I think I looked at my calendar. I was like, I was supposed to go to San Diego with her and she canceled on me. And I'm like, she still didn't tell me that she had breast cancer. So I, as a person of self-centeredness, I took it all as I was a bad friend. I took her information and her diagnosis so personal. And I called her right away and I was really mad. And she kind of reminded me that this was not about me. So thank you for that humbling reminder that your breast cancer diagnosis and the way that you chose to tell me had nothing to do with me and all to do with you. So let's start there. Let's go back to the 11 days before the email was sent to me. Let's go to the day before your breast cancer diagnosis. And let's just talk about who Ceci was. What were you doing in your life? What did your life look like before that diagnosis? How old were you? All that good stuff. So let's start there.
Okay, before that day, well, I was already 27, but when I was 26 is when I had found it. So the days before working in the field that I'm working in at a great company, really focused on that and really focused in my new relationship with the baby daddy, that soon to be daddy. So that was a lot of my focus, and of course my friends and a lot of local traveling and a lot of, remember, a lot of music concerts, mainly with you, hence a lot of the bands we used to follow, things like that. Family, large families, get-togethers, all those things. And then also one of the main things that impacted us in our family was my father's cancer. He had two different cancers going on, and it just was something that I've always focused on being the main one that kind of helped coordinate any of the healthcare for my father, and coordinating that with the however many siblings. There's eight of us. Oh my goodness. But the others that could have helped or can help and whatever. Anyway, I took over and was supporting with my dad. So I think that was a lot of my main focus, is always taking care of other people. So maybe when I found out, it was initial shock. So I think it took some time for me to process that, and then trying to figure out what the plan was, who, what to do, how is it going to change my life. But I had pretty great doctors that gave me a lot of resources in the beginning and reassurance, because it was caught so early that everything started moving pretty quickly. So yeah, that's where I was.
So before you received your diagnosis, how long prior to that was your dad diagnosed with his cancer?
The first one was in 06, and then the second one was in 2009.
Yeah, because you were diagnosed in 2009, and
his second one was in 2010.
10.
Yeah.
So he had already, because I okay, you have 8 siblings. There's 8 of you. How many cousins do you have?
I don't know. I don't keep track anymore.
So Ceci's your typical Mexican stereotype. That the biggest family in the world.
Yes.
So when you had your mastectomy and I went to your waiting room, they had to come in because there were so many people there. Like, we all got kicked out because they were just like, this is too many people. Like, this is a fire hazard.
It's called support. It's called family.
But that was the first time I hadn't seen your dad in a while. And I think that you guys are all so private about what's happening in your family. Your family's so tight, and I only know your family to party. And so I think that you guys hold, I think that that's common in a lot of families, is you hold the things that aren't good, you hold those together and behind the scenes.
Yeah.
And I honestly didn't realize how sick your dad was until I saw him. And that kind of shocked me. So I was already in shock over your diagnosis. And then I was like, wait a minute, what happened to Pops? You know, yeah. I was like, so I could see how you taking care of yourself at that time was not a priority. And I could see how taking care of your dad was more of the priority. And I want to kind of talk about how long it took you to really actually advocate for yourself and really find out that something was wrong. And why it took you so long, because I know that when you originally went in with a lump on your breast, you were denied screening. So can you kind of talk through that? Because that was that's a piece to your story that I hold really dear to my advocacy.
Hence the inspiration.
Yeah. This is what really kind of, not only the inspiration that you're my best friend and probably the most incredible person I've ever met in my life.
Well, thanks.
You've taught me unconditional love. You've loved me regardless of all the weird stuff I've done to you. but you also, like, you know, when we did the fundraiser and you didn't want the funds, like, you're the reason why this even, you could have easily taken the funds and I would still be running across a gym, you know, but I probably will next year, we'll talk about that later. But this detour I took in my life was out of your love and support and selflessness. And so go back to the original time that you thought that you found the lump and that you thought you had an issue.
Right. Well, like you said, I mean, I was focused so much on my dad's illness, really. And focused in the manner of when I felt something was wrong with me. I did take action. I went through my gynecologist. He actually helped me very much during that time in the beginning. Towards the end, he was kind of a dick, but whatever. I'm not with him anymore. So what I remember is in the summer of 2008 or so, I would just, after the appointments, the original appointments that started the screenings or pre-screening, I just recall like daydreaming about having it. And then that would kind of get me, it started the fear, but I would relate back to thinking about my dad and what I had to do there and prioritizing what he needed at that time. And then I was told a lot that, you know, I was given a lot of feedback on when am I checking my breasts from the doctor and doing things at the right time. And am I sure I did it properly? And I probably checked at, you know, during pre-menstrual period or whatever. So they start giving you all this feedback that makes you feel like, okay, well, I screwed up. Maybe it's my fault, right?
You're overthinking it.
And then hence the daydreaming and all that, right? So it's like,
okay. And your dad's going through it. So it could be some psychological.
Perhaps.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And when I went in for the screening, and I'm closing my eyes here as I'm trying to picture everything that was happening to me at that time, it was the doctor pretty much telling me, like, running the ultrasound gel on me and saying that everything's fine. And there was technical terms she mentioned. I don't recall at this time, but
they speak to you like you're like first year medical school.
Yeah. Like I knew what the hell she was talking about. And of course I'm by myself at that point in time. Right. So she signs a form that says mammogram recommended at age 40, which I still have. Mm-hmm. And at that point I said, okay. But I still drove home with those daydreams like, well, what if I had to tell my dad one day? And he was the only one I was thinking about. I'm sorry, I wasn't thinking about you. I was thinking about
dang it.
I was thinking about the person, the most important person in my life at that point in time that I would have to tell and break the news to, right? Mm. But then I got over it. I was like, oh, nothing's wrong. But then it progressed. And this is July. So come holidays and, you know, I've talked in other in other events with Barbells for Boobs about how our family is huge and, you know, huggers and, you know, the way we greet each other, yada, yada. Well, that's where I focus a lot of my memory on, because that's where I started to feel the lump more. And it just continued. And then it progressed into, you know, those spontaneous secretions, I guess you could say. And, you know, well, got to a point where I was like, I need to do something. But I'm not going to go until January. I don't know. I was thinking insurance at the time in my head. Like, When am I going to be able to take care of this? And I was like, I'm going to go January. Not sure what my logic was not going in December. Just really stupid. It was young and not really understanding how all that worked. And then the fact that I was originally denied, right?
Right.
Screening. So I was like, well, maybe I'll have to wait till the beginning of the year. It was kind of stupid.
They won't give me two screenings in one year.
Yeah. But I don't think anyone should ever fear that portion. I think there's like great organizations at Barbells for Boobs that will cover that type of stuff. But at the time I wasn't educated enough and I didn't know. So Anyway, that's when I kind of rolled into the first phase of the actual prognosis.
You feel like from that time of, you know, getting rejected from your screening to when you went back and were diagnosed, did you feel like you had it? Like, I know you saying that you had all these daydreams, but could you almost like, did you have a vision of like, I have breast cancer? Like, did you ever say that to yourself? Or like, did you ever feel like that was something that could be real?
I did. Like I said, during it was more so towards the holiday season is mm-hmm. what I felt like. And then those daydreams were starting again. And I was just picturing having to tell my dad. Mm. And it was so surreal to me.
And you're saying the love from your family kind of allowed it to kind of settle in and not have to like really go and like
that was like the surgery time. It was that whole, you mentioned all the people in the waiting room. I was like, that was overwhelming support. And it was like, I think that's what helped a lot of, you know, the recovery, et cetera, where you were jumping ahead, but that helped that part of the
post, of your diagnosis,
post surgery, yeah. et cetera.
So in the time that you, so you went in July and you were diagnosed in February.
Diagnosed in February, but I had the biopsy done January 13th or so. And then I get a phone call while I'm at work on the next day, January 14th. I just stepped outside and then I just walked into my boss's cubicle and I was like, I have to go home. And I was freaking out. I called Danny and got it. And he just, you know, helped calm me down and just said, like, wait there, I can go get you. And I said I was fine. So I took some time in the parking lot to just like
process
what was being told to me. But the doctor was very, she reassured me that it's caught early. Like we're going to do this. We're going to plan this. And she already gave me several numbers. At that point, it was a load of information, but it was enough information to tell me that we're going to get rid of this in like 2 weeks. Cause February 6th, you know, what was it? 2.5 weeks or so from the day I found out. So,
and what was
it was shock.
What was your diagnosis? Did they give it to you right then and there? Did you know kind of, I mean, I think that once you get a diagnosis, you become a student of breast cancer. And that's what I really definitely saw in you. I remember seeing your binder of with dividers and like all the information you needed to know. But
yeah, but it was still overwhelming because number one thing they tell you is like stay off the internet. And that's probably one thing you should do because it did freak me out. And even when you're like trying to pre-doctor visit, I was already looking up. Like, why was my milk duct leaking and what does this mean and what does that mean? And I was already freaking myself out, hence the daydreams, hence the knowing I think I have breast cancer because I'm not pregnant. So it was like one or the other, right? But she tried to connect me with younger survivors at the time, which there were very few. And there was like a mentorship program that would help you like pre-surgery. But it's not the same when you don't really know the person. I guess you you feel really uncomfortable sometimes. And then at that point in time, some of them, their diagnoses are way different than yours, right? So mine was, she told me that it was, like I said, caught early. It was a DCIS, ductal carcinoma in situ, and that was really reassuring. So at that point in time, I was fine, but I was like, I still didn't know my options. I still had to go meet with, the biggest thing was picking doctors, right? Because now I have to pick a general surgeon. I have to pick an oncologist. And then don't worry, there's reconstructive surgery, which is amazing nowadays. You have to pick plastic surgeons and you have to interview people and you have to have questions ready. So there's a lot of preparation within those 2.5 weeks of things to do, right? So everything goes really fast.
It's like your life just changed overnight.
Absolutely.
And what treatments did you opt for? Like, were you given a menu of like, here's your options. What would you like for dinner? Or was it like, did you know right away kind of?
No, heck okay. No, I didn't know right away. I was freaked out because I had no clue. But depending on the doctor you have, which I've noticed in speaking to other survivors, it's really important. So I was given options based on the size of my breast and given options based on the overall magnitude of the diagnosis, which for me was luckily localized in an area and at this point not known to have spread, right? They don't usually know that stuff until your surgery. But I was given the option of lumpectomy, but then it's like, if you do this, then you might need therapies, right? So at that point, there's more damage to your body. And then there were other things, both removing both breasts. And then at that point, and Danny's, my boyfriend, he's sitting next to me and I'm looking at him like freaked out and he's just soaking it in. Right. Yeah. And you always have to have someone there, by the way, make sure that you have someone with you at your doctor's appointments. And then the third option I remember was that was the second option, and then the single mastectomy, and then opting for that because if you remove it on, they get all the breast tissue out, then you don't need any therapies and whatnot, right?
Okay.
And of course, with the aspiration of I still want to be a mom one day, and you know they give you the high risk feedback on what can happen. You may not be able to
keep your breasts. But she even talked about like saving eggs. And I was like, oh, it was like way too much all in this one 30 minutes or an hour conversation. But
and you
I
have
mean,
to make these really long term life decisions.
Yeah. And I'm like, I'm in not two ready. Weeks. Less than that, really. Less than that, yeah, probably less than that. I exaggerated a bit because my surgery went, it was so quickly, but it was scheduled so quickly, but I had to pick all those doctors before that.
Do you think that our medical system is rushing those procedures?
I'm happy they rushed it. I'm not complaining about that. I just think there was a lot of information that I needed to be educated on. And from somebody that, you know, just did the standard basic care to and not knowing terms. And now I hear all these other terms, triple negative, this and that. And it's overwhelming even today to hear that from survivors, because some of it I still just don't understand. It's too much. So, and I'm inspired by you, by how well you've educated yourself. I didn't even go that level. I just wanted to get it done, get it out of my body and move
out
on.
Out of my life. And then see happen.
Peace. And then all of a sudden, all over my life.
Sorry.
Exactly. Yeah.
Sorry.
So hence the time it took me to tell people, because it was this like ultimate shock, right?
Yeah.
And what do we do? And so anyway, there was big decisions I had to make, but all I knew is that I wanted to do the least impact to my body, which is why the right side went away, and then the hope of being able to live a normal life.
Right, go to a normal life. So you're 27 years old, and you're having to make these really long-term decisions, and I want everyone to think about, you know, whether you're 27 now or when you were 27, to think about getting a disease that's going to be taking away some of your female parts and operating parts that are really critical to reproduction. And, you know, 7% of women breast cancer diagnosis are under 40. And mm-hmm. so there are a lot of resources out there. We continue to see more and more coming out. And I think because of social media and because mm-hmm. of the advocacy that's happening with the younger generation, you're seeing more and more women come out about their diagnosis and bringing more information and getting really involved in breast cancer. Hence, you know, Barbells for Boobs.
Right.
I was inspired to do something at the age of 29 because my young friend was diagnosed. And so I really want to talk through that. You're 27. I think for me, the biggest memory during that entire time for me was meeting Danny.
Mm-hmm.
So I had not met Ceci's boyfriend at this time.
Yeah.
I met him at the hospital in the waiting room.
Right, right.
And I'd heard of him. I knew who he was. And for me, that was such a big deal because it was a brand new relationship. You guys mm-hmm. had just started dating. And for me, I'm like, you know, you hear about women getting diagnosed and their husbands leaving them.
Mm-hmm.
And so meeting this man, oh my God. And I was checking him out more than ever. I was like, who are you? Oh, you're here? What are you doing? You know, like I still do that to Danny. I love you, Danny. No, I don't anymore. Not really. Not anymore. But for me, it was such an important part to your story because you're 27, you're newly, you know, you're probably still dating at 27. You're trying to figure out your own life. And
right.
And meeting him in your waiting room was really impactful for me because I think that I had already put my judgment on him and I had already created a story in my head that he was going to leave and he wasn't going to be around and there's no reason for me to invest in this person at all.
Right. Right.
And
I think he felt that from you.
For sure. Until about a year ago.
Yeah.
Until he got you pregnant. I was like, you stuck.
Shut up, fool. She's kidding, you guys.
No, and I think that's really important for me to say out loud because it's true. And I think that the other women that are going through this that are younger, you know, who are you dating? How did your family feel about them? And I'm just going to be honest. I had already articulated what was going to happen.
Yeah.
And I'm thankful that he did. And I'm thankful that he stood by your side. And it's what, 10 years, 11 years later.
Almost 12.
12 years mm-hmm. later. And he's still with you. And so, you know, shout out to Danny. Sorry I judged you. My apologies. I'm making my amends through this podcast. But I think that was...
I think you did it over wine one time, but it's all right. Whatever.
Yeah, I did over wine for sure at an Angels game.
Yeah.
what was that like for your dad? And where was your dad at that time of treatment? Because I know, you know, if you're willing to share, I know that you lost your father after your diagnosis. Mm-hmm. And how did that kind of impact your family and your diagnosis and your recovery? If you don't mind kind of talking through that, and what did your dad think of Danny?
I think maybe in some points he had the same fears, right? That you just mentioned, that I would be left, I guess, mm-hmm. alone, or heartbroken, perhaps going through such a, you know, devastating, life changing event with the breast cancer, situation. But at the same time, I think my dad was just trying to live life to the fullest, because at that point, he wasn't diagnosed actually till later that year. But he was more just concerned with me being happy. And my dad was a man of very little words. But I could tell, you know, how his reactions, and he was just, even towards the time when he got diagnosed, it was like late 2009. Going into 2010, he told Danny, like, take care of her, and that was it. Like, my dad just, even to me, he said, everything's gonna be fine. Like, you're gonna be okay. And I'm so, he was even at some points concerned that this happened because of him. And I'm like, Dad, they're completely different, completely disconnected. It had nothing to do with your cancer and
or
my
your
cancer,
genetics,
right? So he was more concerned in that aspect, but. My dad had full faith in my decisions, and he knew I was very resilient because I've gone through some traumatic things, most of us in my family. And it all depends on the person. And I think he had faith that I can get through it.
Right? That you would be.
And that I would be just fine. And I did. And I have gotten through quite a bit. The same things perhaps some of my other siblings have, but yet some of us take things differently.
Yeah.
So.
Do you feel like you had what was the difference in strength, you think, that I know your background and I know how you were raised, and you were raised very similar to your other siblings. Like, what do you think that created that resiliency in you and being able to handle adversity? Living with me?
No. A lot of it had to do with my pops, and it's just how we had a great connection versus like, and I was always, I'm the middle child, I'm number five. So you're always just trying to do better because you're like trying to get attention, I guess.
Yeah.
But perhaps that was something that helped, that I was more just stuck on doing good in school and being a good leader and doing leadership things and always being involved with things that were extracurricular, and some of the siblings weren't. And then one of the biggest things I think was music, because my dad was a musician. So a lot of that just takes, you're able to, I guess, drown your sorrows or whatnot through music and just through harmony and everything you hear. And it kind of helps heal your soul, which some of us handle things differently. So I think that's the separation between some of my siblings and myself, right? It's how we handle those types of traumatic events or whatever challenges.
Yeah. I think that
growing
music,
up,
music is definitely a art of healing.
Mm-hmm.
So. I think that's why your dad was a man of few words. He had,
because it was through music.
Yeah,
you communicate through music sometimes too. So, I had all that growing up.
Wow. So, I can't say that loud. My sound engineer doesn't want me to say so loud. That was whenever I say so, everybody. I should start saying son. It's me transitioning.
It's all good.
Son, hey son. I went to school in Brooklyn, so that's where I picked up son. I haven't used it since then, but I'll use it today. So, son. So you get through your diagnosis, you're cancer-free, kind of, you know, you lay your father to rest.
Uh-huh.
And then Barbell Shrubus kind of comes to life and becomes kind of this beast. Didn't predict it to be at all.
Right.
And give us a little bit of your thoughts on Barbells for Boobs, the work it's doing. I mean, you are the reason it exists. And I, you know, Ceci always says, like, I didn't even do anything. I just got breast cancer. And so,
yeah, I didn't ask for this.
No. I didn't ask for this. Like no, I said, she's a very private person, and I just really told the awesome. World without asking her permission. I didn't even ask her permission for this podcast, but whatever, we're doing it. So,
I didn't sign anything.
Kind of talk through that to know that something, you know, again, I didn't know what Barbell Shaboos was going to kind of become. So, what are your thoughts on your legacy and who you are as a person and what you represent to have such an impact on someone so awesome like myself to want to kind of advocate and take, because Barbells for Boobs is the way I heal, you know, like I couldn't really do anything other than show up to your room and give you a head massage.
That was awesome. Thank you.
You're welcome. Anytime.
Mm-hmm. My hammy's hurt right now. If you
want to hook me up. So what did that do for you and how, because I knew that it's taken you a long time. I feel like probably the first 5 years you weren't really around. You were like, cool, like, I don't know what you're doing, but it sounds coolzy.
Well, yeah, it was hard because I guess I'm modest. I'm not sure, maybe a little shy. And it was something you were doing and I, you know, big ups to Z for taking it where as far as it could go and it's going, continues to grow. I wanted to help. I wanted to get involved, but then it felt a little odd because even at sometimes I was made feel, I felt some certain people made me feel like, oh, yours was not really cancer. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, stage zero DCIS. And I'm like, but I had a mastectomy. I went through the same exact things except some of the therapies because I made a different choice, right? It depends on your choices. So that made it kind of difficult to, I guess,
be on a microphone
to talk like, about yeah. Because in most cases you have folks that are or women or men or whomever, folks being diagnosed that had to make tougher decisions and have to go through certain therapies that I didn't have to go through. So I just felt like, I'm not the right person to represent, right? Mm. But in other times, I'm grateful as well because you've made such an impact to young people and letting co-survivors know and make them aware of what you should be talking about and people don't talk about, you know, like even with like death and whatnot, like when things I went through with my dad. So it's like cancer is important to talk about. So is death. And you need to plan ahead or you need to like plan for those types of things and have those critical conversations that are difficult. So anyway, I'm grateful because it let us start to be transparent about our breasts and cancer in general. Right.
Yeah.
So it raised the awareness and then you guys figured out how to tie or connect with other larger organizations and making sure the funds were helping people and keeping great metrics on who it's going to. So at that point, it just spiraled into this great, even better thing that I didn't think could happen, but it did. And it's happening. So it's pretty amazing.
I remember when I don't remember specifically the conversation, but I remember having conversations with you. And I want to say that it was when you were getting your saline injections. Like I remember walking into the waiting room and first of all, I remember you were bummed because they weren't healed up enough and you couldn't get your injections that day. And you were like, damn it.
Yeah.
But I remember you saying like,
it was nice that you lived close by because Z would just like, whoa, you're there. I'll be there in 5 minutes. And I was like, oh, okay. Like that was pretty awesome. So,
well, I remember there was a woman sitting and again, like if my memory serves me correctly, but there was a woman sitting there and she had a bald head and you were like, almost like I could tell that the conversation was based around like you didn't feel like a survivor because you didn't go through treatment and that you had this almost guilt to your treatment plan. Mm-hmm. And I've spoken to a lot of women, especially, you know, stage zero women, that there's a lot of guilt and shame that's associated with your treatment because you didn't have to go through the multiple therapies or the aggressive treatment.
Shame from
treatment.
Other survivors even, which is unfortunate. See, they wouldn't discriminate against each
other.
Yeah,
see, breast cancer don't
Sorry,
discriminate.
Sorry, I'm not triple should... negative. Like, okay.
I don't even know what that is.
Yeah. I had to Google it.
And I think that what we as a community anybody that's in breast cancer has to really realize is that we should be really grateful that you didn't have to go through those aggressive treatments. We should be really grateful that you had the early detection, because what if you waited till you're 40? So we'd be okay. We'd be,
I wouldn't be here. I wouldn't be here right now speaking to you guys. Probably.
It would be better off for you to find out so late in life and then you're, there's no treatment for you, you know? So let's be easy on each other with these.
It's unfortunate how, just in anything, right? It's so funny how you see that, and just even in your own ethnicity, it's like, you know, there's a lot of, we call them haters. It's always going to come up, but within our own survivorship, like that was, but then that just made me feel like, okay, well, I'm not a, you know,
my story doesn't matter.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you. That's where I took that. And I said, dude, my friend's story matters. It matters so much that I'm going to tell the world about it.
Yep.
And so I almost took a reverse psychology to what was happening to you, because your story was so important. It impacted my life so much,
right?
Because I didn't know that breast cancer happened that young, and so it was so
eye-opening for everyone around us.
Yeah, so everyone.
Thank you for creating a forum for people to talk about it and raise money in different ways. And what I really liked about Barbells for Boobs is that it was proactive, and we knew the funds were, at least the initial intent was mammograms in action. Remember that you were gonna make sure that no one had to worry about that. And if your doctor said that you couldn't have one, like, you should still request one and they'll pay for it.
And then I did a little research, a little Googling. I was like, oh, young women don't get mammograms. Okay, let me not name it mammograms in action. and I've learned, because I didn't know anything other than my own ignorance.
But it's evolved so that that's the thing. It's not just research, right? That's not the focus here. It's awareness. It's education.
Support.
The support part is like all that's evolved through the original just mammogram.
Yeah. And well, let's talk about the evolution of Barbells for Boobs, and kind of let's now kind of take a look at, you know, who is Ceci today and what's happening in your life today. And one of the things that's so fascinating, and we're really evolving Barbells for Boobs into providing fitness and really having that support and information and education, early detection. Again, we're still huge advocates, but the more and more we've grown Barbells for Boobs, we've really seen this gap in fitness after diagnosis. And it was really exposed to me once my sister was diagnosed, and having to kind of go back into the diagnosis part with a loved one. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, so for the listeners out there that don't know, my sister passed away a year ago to stage 4 breast cancer. Actually, it was spread to her brain. But she was diagnosed in 2016, and I want to say around that same time is when Ceci started working out. And so not only was I going through, you know, my sister getting this aggressive stage 4 diagnosis at a young age at 43, my best friend that was also the inspiration of Barbells for Boobs started really taking care of herself in a way that, you know, I had always asked her to.
I was afraid of a barbell, everyone, okay? It took me a while. I had never done Grace, even.
No, she was a slow learner.
Yeah, yeah. I did the PVC pipe for quite some time. That's about all I lifted.
But it was a really great evolution in my life and in the work that I was doing in breast cancer, because now Ceci was doing something where the programs I was building and I was working on were actually going to help her. Mm-hmm. And I think it was last year where, you know, Ceci really got, she came in, she was weightlifting with us, and she was really working with us on our new programs. And I remember at the Christmas dinner, I was like, I have succeeded. I can shut down Barbells for Boobs because I have finally helped Ceci out.
I finally touched a barbell.
Ceci picked up a barbell. And that was really, really humbling and sad. Like, I was so grateful and satisfied from my work and my voice of fitness and how I take care of myself, for you to finally listen and embrace it. So let's kind of talk about, who is Ceci today? What does fitness look like? How do you take care of yourself? And kind of talk through your pregnancy and what's happening with your body right now.
Okay, whoa, that's a whole lot.
Well, that was a whole lot of questions.
That's a whole lot of questions in one. So today I'm still a workaholic, and then I've tried to squeeze in pre-pregnancy. It was a my gym that I go to, Fit Brea, I'm going to give them a shout out real quick to my
Fit
coach.
Brea.
Yep. They offer good schedule for me, and there was offering challenges. That's what I wanted to say. There, the challenge to monitor nutrition, et cetera, and you know, there's money involved. So then, at that point, you wanna participate and you wanna compete.
Forget
a little
your
bit.
Health. Yeah, man, if there's money involved.
I was like, all right, no. But in all seriousness, it really helped me. And these were things that Z had already told me, and macro counting. And I was like, oh, I kind of know because my friend told me a long time ago, but I never listened. Her.
I know this girl.
Yeah. So throughout my fitness journey, I started focusing a lot on my nutrition and realizing that it's what we're bringing into our body. Our body's a temple, and depending on what you put there, obviously it's how you're going to progress and grow, and muscles grow, etc. So I got really excited about it, and I did used to like working out. I guess I was following certain things and whatever. Anyway, I found what I liked. I found good times. I found a good
community
of great athletes and other folks that were just living day workaholics like me. And at that point, through the challenge, I did really well. My name was thrown on the board. I was lifting heavy weights. I was reaching. What do you call them? One rep maxes.
PRs.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Yes.
Personal records.
I'm still learning, as you can see.
Still a rookie 2 years later.
Yeah. So anyway, so that was
Wait. Did you win any money?
Oh, I did. I was called a wild card. So there were two winners, and then
challenge.
Yeah. I was a wild card because, I don't know, I think it was body weight or body mass or whatever. I still don't understand all that stuff, but I did win, and my name was on the board. They just took our names down, by the way, a year later, because we're starting that one rep max stuff again. But I'm not going to participate because, lo and behold, I'm pregnant. So I'm not going to participate in doing any one.
Fans go crazy.
It's really exciting. I'm not going to participate in doing anything crazy, but I am still working out, despite what you know. I know I shouldn't take this for granted, but my body still wants the pain from the soreness that I'm feeling right now in my hamstrings. But it's really, it makes me feel good and helps me with stress and let out my aggression or whatever that I get from work and just overall.
She's a very angry person.
I'm only hangry now. That's all. So with what the advice I've gotten is, you know, you have to keep my heart rate under a certain amount per doctors. One doctor told me 20 pounds. Another doctor told me 40. And then the other doctor said, keep doing what you've been doing if you've been working out. Just don't try to break any records or anything. Yeah. So I've also listened to BirthFit quite a bit.
Yes, BirthFit. Check them out.
Yeah. Was trying to see what I can do there. But talking to my coaches, they've coached quite a few pregnant women who I've seen progress through the gym. So I trust their feedback, and I just need to trust myself. So I'm just focusing on if I'm running out of breath or whatnot, I just take it easy. And some of my Asian friends told me I shouldn't even carry groceries.
Your Asian friends.
Tea's crazy. So I'm not going to stop carrying groceries. I'm going to continue to do housework and continue to lift a barbell till I can't
take it over your tummy.
Exactly.
Yes.
If I need to do a snatch or whatever, then and it can't go over my belly, then I'm not going to, I'll put it down at that point.
You'll use a dumbbell.
Oh, I guess I can. Well, whatever.
Well, I got pregnant in 2012. Whoa.
Do the math.
2012, which there was no information, not a lot of information about during pregnancy fitness. Now, you know, with BirthFit and a lot of CrossFit athletes or CrossFit community going through pregnancy, and the guidelines were given to me of like, don't let your heart rate go over 140, don't squat below parallel, and a lot of this kind of I think what it is what the standard guideline that doctors are okay providing for you, but right. what I think is happening in the world with this fitness movement is more people are more people are getting in the best shape of their lives. And
it's all over Instagram or all over social media.
All over social media. The message is spreading wider that being strong is beautiful. Mm-hmm. Like it's the new skinny in a sense. And so I think what's happened since I've been pregnant, so in the last 7 years, is more information is getting put out there and people are pioneering more information. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's what our goal is on the breast cancer side, is we want to make sure that this, if you're fit and you want to stay fit during treatment, that we have the community to get you there. And if you don't even know where to start, you know, we still want to have that information for newbies. But I think it's the same thing as if you weren't doing it before you were pregnant, if you weren't doing it before your diagnosis,
don't start
during treatment.
Yeah.
But definitely.
I agree with that. No doubt.
But definitely, I think that fitness is a part of your life and it should be a part of your pregnancy. It should be a part of, you know, your survivorship. I don't think that people should be scared to walk in the gym. Women should be scared to walk into a gym because they're pregnant or because they've gone through breast cancer.
Exactly.
So that's my rant for the day.
Well said. Well said.
Has anything scared you in the gym yet?
Double unders.
Double unders, right?
Yeah. They're my favorite. So I used to be a kangaroo kid.
She's amazing.
Circa 92, I think. Yeah. The jump rope was my favorite thing. And it was the one tool in the gym that I can like pretty much out jump somebody, but I can't outlift them. Fine, whatever. But now through pregnancy and what I had to go through the first 12 weeks, yeah, don't jump rope when you have to take progesterone. It's just not a good idea. So I've just stopped it for now. And then just not knowing, like the whole jumping and even burpees kind of scare me. Mm. So I'll just do like a push up, you know. So everything is in modified and, you know, based on how you feel. So. Yeah. That was one of the main things that threw me off. Jumping. And the other stuff is like the cardio. It's like, oh, everyone
running.
Hates cardio.
I can't run. Psh. I remember that was the first thing I ended. I was like, oh, I can't run. It hurts. It didn't hurt.
It doesn't hurt. No. We could walk. We could run. But just take it easy. But if you can continue to lift, that's something I want to continue to do.
Lifting. So. Even though your Asian friends say not.
Yeah, whatever. She's crazy. So it was, you had five questions in one, exercise,
five questions
pre-pregnancy, post-pregnancy. I'm still continuing, right? And then
fitness. So, okay. What are your doctors right now telling you? Like you're pregnant, you have one breast. Uh-huh. Are you still talking to your oncologist? Are they involved in your pregnancy at all? Are they, what does that look like? And how are your boobs doing?
Okay. So again, five freaking questions in one. So one thing is I totally forgot to tell my breast surgeon and oncologist that I was, I don't really have an oncologist anymore. I have a breast surgeon, general breast surgeon that I go to. I haven't told him I'm pregnant until last week. I hadn't told him.
Should that have happened sooner, do you think?
Probably. Because I think I was due for
all you pregnant breast cancer survivors out there, tell your breast surgeons.
Yeah, don't forget to tell your breast surgeons or your oncologists that you're pregnant. They should be probably the second people you call. I missed the month. I was supposed to go in June for like a mammogram. But I called them finally, and I'm still going to have an ultrasound. And we may still do an MRI because it's magnetic, so it's not high risk for the baby. So that was one thing is communicating with my doctors, and something you all should do as well. And then the second thing was the appearance, because my left side is getting bigger than my right side. So at this point, it's really funny too. I actually, funny story. I was at a gig for one of my friend's bands, and there was a couple there from work. He brought his wife, and they had a newborn, well, like 5 months old. But she was like, "Oh, can I give you some advice?" Because you know she found out I was pregnant. She's never met me before, so she has no clue of my past or anything. She goes, "Breastfeed from both breasts." I made the mistake of doing it from one breast, and I was like, okay, noted. Great advice. And I was like, shit, like that's going to be me. I'm only going to be doing it from one side. But anyway, I thought that was funny because she had no clue. I wanted to tell her, but I was like, I'm just going to let her talk. And I just took her feedback because right now I get feedback from every pregnant woman or mom or whatnot. And it's funny to hear everybody's insight.
We all know.
Especially the old, the new, right? The traditional comments you get, especially being Mexican, you hear a lot from the Mexican mamas and then, oh, the things they didn't have and whatnot, right? So I, like, even with exercise, like I tell Danny, like your family grew up in like a farm or whatever, right? So I'm sure they were chasing chickens around and running around. Like
I can
run. If they can run, I can run. So anyway, just small little comparisons like that. But the feedback on the one breast is always hilarious. But through some other good friends of mine, they give me the same advice. Sometimes the kid will only get from one side. So I'm really hopeful that I'm able to do that. But the appearance I was getting to is that I have to start thinking about prosthetics or something to the right because it's starting to look a little weird and it's getting bigger. And,
you can't see, but Ceci's
but I lifted my
breast.
Shirt up earlier and showed them so to give them a full visual of what
Maybe
I'm going through.
Maybe we can get
through.
A photo of this and share it with our community. It's pretty, it's the stuff that you don't think about, you know?
Yeah.
And so I'm going to go back to when Ceci decided to save that breast.
Yep.
I was actually really mad at you again because it was all about me. Because I was scared of reoccurrence. And I remember you telling me that when God wants that breast gone, he'll let me know.
Yes. To me, I'm leaving it to the faith. Yes.
Yeah. And I was like, well, I'm God and I'm telling you that you should take both gone, you know, like both should be gone because your chances of reoccurrence would lessen. And so, but you know, fast forward 12 years later, I'm so grateful you kept it because to experience
10 years.
Mm-hmm. Sorry.
12 was the
it's,
me and
you
Danny.
Know, you forget, like it's like after you turn 40, I don't know how old I am anymore.
And I have preggo brain.
And so but now I'm grateful that you get to experience breastfeeding. And I wasn't thinking about that when I was 29. Like, and so
see, and I
goes back to when you're 27, you have to make these decisions. I would have made the decision to be like, bye. And
no,
so I'm grateful that you didn't.
That.
Yeah, see, I wouldn't.
No, I was like, oh, I want to be a mom one day. I want to keep my breast and I hope to be able to breastfeed. So fingers crossed. You guys can give me feedback on how to produce milk.
Here's my one advice on breastfeeding. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Everybody and their mama is going to ask you how long you're going to breastfeed for. And here is how you respond. Are you ready?
Yes.
Until the end of the day. And I'll let you know how it goes tomorrow. Every time
that
I'm like,
sounds good.
Is there some miracle time to breastfeed? Like, why is this such an important question that everybody is so curious about?
Or
like,
when's the next one coming, right?
Yeah. Like, can't we just enjoy this one?
One day at a time, everybody.
One day at a time. What has been your biggest lesson that you've gotten from breast cancer?
Oh, the biggest lesson is, you know, live for today. I even have that on my little Skype business. Eat the cookie. You just don't know what's going to happen. You know, some people contemplate eating the cookie. Eat the damn cookie.
Unless you're counting macros. Or if you are, you better count that cookie.
Fit the cookie into your macros and eat the damn cookie. Stop worrying about it. Life is too short. And that's why I have a problem saying no. And I want to attend every event and travel anywhere I can and do as much as I can. So.
And that I have from being a very close friend. Ceci's changed since her diagnosis in a very positive way. Ceci was kind of a dork.
What?
Whoa. Let me clarify.
The truth comes out like 20 years later.
I know, it's okay. But Ceci was kind of a low life.
No life.
She would just sit at home all the time. She'd be like, I'm just going to sit at home.
That's that young. Okay.
Back in the day,
what I told you because I didn't want to hang out with your last name.
Maybe.
I was like, I'm home tonight. She just wants to bring another friend over and have him spend the night.
On the couch.
So I had a lie. I'm just kidding.
But she didn't. I don't think that you were really taking life to where you take life now.
No, I was actually the most adventurous when I hung out with Z, guys, because I went, my first airplane ride to Miami was with Z.
See?
You know, first like.
First time spending the night in a hotel room with a stranger with Z.
Oh, yeah, I guess. I don't remember
Miami. Oh, yes, that's right.
They were really nice guys.
Yeah, first time being a band groupie. I mean, I was doing some pretty adventurous stuff with this gal. Yeah, so
we were fun.
It was a lot of fun, but that's why she like let me out of my shell and we got all dolled up and did really cool things.
I've been eating the cookie for a long time.
Yeah. She has been. But not the edible one. Anyway, we started giving Gorda some. Oh, Gorda's my dog, by the way. She's taking some
also CB, known as
some CBD,
Raider,
DHA, omegas.
Why does all she have two stuff. Names? Can you explain this to me?
Everyone has like a, we a, call them.
A full name and then a nickname?
A nickname, yeah. I have a full name and don't call me the full name, but my nickname is Ceci. Yeah.
Ceci is not that's her real
how
name. You,
that's how things go, I guess. Chris, I mean, do you have a full name? Okay. Some people just get called.
Double names?
Yeah. That's just, you live double life.
Okay.
Home life and corporate life or home life and, you know, nonprofit life.
I have a few names.
Yeah. What are they? Do share.
I mean, what was my nickname growing up?
Dre.
Yeah. So if you know me as Dre, you've known me for a long time.
Yeah.
So if there's somebody out in the world that maybe has never heard of Barbells for Boobs, mm-hmm. Why do you think that it would be, number one, do you think it's important for people that have gone through breast cancer or that have loved ones that have gone through breast cancer that it's important that they know about Barbells for Boobs? And if you feel like it's important, how do you think that our organization can serve and, mm-hmm. and like what it's done for you and just from what you've seen and the changes and the evolution of Barbells for Boobs since you know, day one.
Well, number one is the other great things that are coming out of it, like the RAD program, right? So anybody that just heard about Barbells for Boobs, especially if you're a breast cancer survivor and you're trying to get back into fitness or you're trying to find your fitness journey and start it, I think this is one of the greatest things that the secondary program that has been developed, the RAD program, is something that they should know about. And then also there's a really awesome Facebook support group where you can ask questions. I mean, I go on there and read them. I don't respond a lot because, again,
private.
Well, just some of the things I went through are not, they're same. Not comparable. It's mm-hmm. just like, wow, some of these survivors are really, or just folks that are going through treatment have it very difficult and it's very different experience for everybody. But people are real. They're super transparent. So you have that. And again, it's this like mentorship program, non-face-to-face, but you can make it that. So that's another great opportunity you get out of it. And then obviously the other main programs that Barbells for Boobs support since as far as the
early detection.
Yes, the mammograms. Or
Do you feel like you, because of Barbells for Boobs, you actually have been exposed to like, do you feel like you've been around breast cancer more?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Like,
do you 100%. Think that you wouldn't have necessarily kind of engaged in a group or?
I tried to with the hospital, with Long Beach Memorial. There were several programs that I was tried to attend or like they try to keep you involved post-surgery, nutritional programs mm-hmm. and, you know, it's a different connection.
It's different, right?
It's a different style. This is a lot more, I guess, considering because of the whole connection with working out and fitness through.
You could say it. We're fun.
Well, yeah, I guess. You read my mind because I did want to say that, but I didn't want to like. It's a different.
You
can't
don't
compare
value. Yeah, it is that we're doing.
The hospital's doing something. They do great things and they try really hard. But I mean, it's just it's more the colors. Everything grabs your attention more. You feel like you can actually you have a better connection than you do with you know hospital terms and things like that because they do try. They did try with me.
Yeah.
But it wasn't the same. So
and I always say that like. I think it's so important that the medical world keeps to the medical things, which mm-hmm. I think is the treatment and making sure that you have the right treatment plan. Mm-hmm. But I think that when it comes to living your life and eating the cookie and you know, moving on and moving on with who you are today, mm-hmm. that Barbells for Boobs is a great partner in that.
Absolutely.
After you're diagnosed.
Yep.
Do you have anything else you want to share?
No, I think we covered a lot of. Yeah, I need to get that prosthetic going. I gotta get sized.
If anybody knows anything about a breast prosthetic,
no, I know someone. I'm using my resources. Don't get me wrong. I know I know a guy who knows a guy. I'm gonna get hooked up with this prosthetic over here. So don't worry, they're gonna look the same when you see me. I think that's the one thing I'm worried about. And then all the other great things that come with it, like daycare and trying to figure out life as a mom and still a corporate
hustler.
Yeah, I guess that's the word. Trying to travel and whatnot. But I have a great family support. But we'll see if they're still there when the baby's born.
Hey, girl, you live too far now.
I know. Right? Now I get that you live too far. Whatever. I'm over the canyon. It's not that bad. Yeah.
Well, so. Thanks for being on today. I hope that our story, your story, I just made myself a part of your story. You see, I did that. I hope it inspires people to eat the f-ing cookie.
Yeah, but and also next phase, you got to think about helping pregnant survivors because.
Oh, here we go.
I'm just saying, you're doing it through fitness.
I need a prosthetic line now.
I don't know. Figure it out. She gets real creative, so something's coming now to help pregnancy or pregnant survivors.
I've been talking to birth fit.
See? No. The creative juices are flowing in the room. So
always. Yeah.
But that'll be the. I think that's a big thing because I was really concerned about that, and that's why I think birth fit's pretty awesome. But also now breast
now
cancer.
Another layer of
there's
birth
another
fit.
Layer to
the
to that.
Pink birth fit.
Yeah, to that. So make it happen, woman.
I'll have my people talk to your people.
Awesome.
Well, thanks for tuning in, and big ups to Ceci and all the things that she has conquered in the last 12 years since the inception of Barbells for Boobs, and for being such a solid friend and being such a great inspiration, not only to me, but giving me the opportunity to share it with thousands and thousands of people. So I'm super grateful and humble to share this podcast, this episode with you, because really just to get some insight on how wonderful of a person she is. So thanks for being here.
Thanks, guys. Thank you, Chula. I love you.
Love you too. Peace.